Okay, so you're listening to WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran Storch, and you're about to hear Radio Naturopath. And as that gentleman said, if you'd like to apply for a show here at WHUS, you can do that. You kind of have to have gone through the training program, but it's time for the application. If you haven't gone through the training program, you might want to do that. And you can find out details about how to do that by checking out whus.org. So you are listening to Radio Naturopath. I am Fran Storch, and you'll be with me for the next hour, along with my lovely co-host, Ron Meniza.
I'm lovely this morning.
Yeah, you're pretty lovely.
Yeah, not too bad.
You'll do.
Mm.
Yeah, you're pretty cool.
Yep.
I'm really happy that it's a gorgeous day. It looks like it's a low dew point, and it's really sunny, and it's really lovely out. It's a great day to get outside, and somewhat different than yesterday. So it'll be nice to get outside. I'm looking forward to going out and doing some intervals today. I might do a little bit of extra riding after that. I'll see. But I do plan to get out on my bike because it's just a great day to do that. And then this is going to segue into it's going to segue into what we're going to talk about today. I'm going to not ride my bike tomorrow. And I'm only going to do extra riding if I feel like it today, and I'm going to really be honest with myself, because if sitting around on my chaise lounge in my backyard sounds more appealing after I do my intervals, I'm going to do that, because I made myself some fresh iced tea, and it's sitting in my refrigerator, and I think I need to sit with a big, tall glass of my iced tea, a tiny bit of sweetener, and some lemon, and just look at the birds and see what's doing on the power lines and watch the leaves and the grass grow. That sounds like a good thing. Okay, so the first thing I want to talk about is I want a big shout out to Sean from Florida, or Sean from nearby, who goes to Florida. He says that he goes to Florida and he gets a rash every year. He will miss a spot with his sunscreen, and then he gets a sunburn and he gets a heat rash. And he wants to know if there's a way to ease the symptoms for heat rash. So let's talk about heat rash for a little bit. So it's interesting because, let's distinguish between a couple of kinds of heat rashes. So first of all, some people are simply sun sensitive. And what happens is they get in the sun, and not only do they get a sunburn, but they get a histaminic reaction where they get hives and a rash from being exposed to the sun. You might have a condition called warm agglutinins, where you have antibodies that will get excited because they've been exposed to heat. And that will happen in situations of heat, not just the sun. And then there's also a situation where you get exposed to ultraviolet rays, and the ultraviolet rays set off a histaminic reaction, and that can be a sun rash. So that's a specific thing, and not everybody gets that. In fact, most people don't, but a certain percentage of people do. And so if that's you, and of course, if your rash is uncomfortable, you don't really want to be getting inflammation from the sun. And so, of course, there's debate as to whether sunscreen is really a good thing, because on the one hand, if you get too much sun exposure, you can get a sunburn, and too much ultraviolet radiation on your skin can cause changes in the skin so that you get metaplasia, dysplasia. You can get just spots on your skin, things like actinic keratosis, which is not cancer. And then you can get various kinds of cancer. Now, there's debate about whether the sun really causes skin cancer. But what we do see is that people who live in the sun, who live in sun and who don't wear a lot of sunscreen, will get more squamous cell carcinomas and basal cell carcinomas. That is just something that you see. So that is an element to it. I think that you are less likely to get those the healthier of a lifestyle that you lead. So if you are doing things to inflame your body and you're not consuming enough anti-cancer things like turmeric and eating your fruits and vegetables, and you are eating too much sugar, drinking too much alcohol, those cause oxidative damage. And so if those are going on, you're more likely to have any sort of rash that can be related to the sun. So how do you prevent those from happening? If you get the rashes all the time, you probably do want to use a good sunscreen. And when I talk about sunscreen, I like to talk about natural sunscreens that have good ingredients in them, like cocoa butter and shea butter and green tea. Green tea topically is a great antioxidant, and it prevents cancer on all the surfaces that it touches. Turmeric as well. The thing about green tea is that green tea is green. Like if you have matcha, powdered green tea in a product and you put it on your skin, it is going to look a little bit green, which is a little bit humorous. I do own both sunscreens and lotions that have green tea in them, and I enjoy them. But I noticed the lotion definitely makes my skin look a little bit green. And yet I don't mind it because it's really good for me, you know. And so the other thing is turmeric. If you have turmeric in any of your products, generally I haven't seen a skincare product yet that has turmeric in it. The problem with turmeric, it is as green as green tea is, turmeric is very yellow. But turmeric, once again, is something that whatever surface it touches, it causes antioxidant activity, and green tea and turmeric are both anti-mutagenic, so they can help to prevent the mutations that can lead to changes in your skin and also skin cancer. So even if it turns you yellow, if you add turmeric to your sunscreen or to your lotion, you are going to have health benefits from that. I don't know if you want to, because again, it's going to turn your skin yellow and it can even stain a little bit. Generally, when I talk about using turmeric on the skin, I suggest people use it on acute, small inflammations like acne pimples, you know, blemishes, that kind of thing. We put it in a little bit of coconut oil so it'll stick, and then you put the turmeric on top of that, and it does make whatever you've got reduced. It's a really nice thing. You can also buy emulsified turmeric. So if you can get turmeric emulsions in liposomal form, you can put that on topically, and that can help you with any kind of blemish. Again, you have to not mind it being a little bit yellow. But in terms of the sun rash, you do kind of have to wear sunscreen, and I like sunscreens that have optic elements to them, so they're going to have either zinc or titanium in them, non-micronized, so they're like big particles of those things, so you're not really going to absorb those metals, and then they wash off at the end of the day, and then the good sunscreen will have other great ingredients like shea butter or cocoa butter or jojoba oil, or aloe, you know, nothing that's going to be a chemical. You don't want to see lauryl sulfates, you don't want to see phthalates, and you don't want to see parabens in any of your topical skincare products. So look for those and avoid them. And you can get healthful skincare products and sun products at health food stores. And they're beginning to be more available even online as well as at supermarkets. So you have to try to do your sunscreen. I will say that if you consume a diet that is full of antioxidants, there are things you can do to prevent sun rashes and even sunburn. I don't know that it will prevent it 100%, but it can mitigate the effects of it. So if you tend to get sunburn as well as that rash, and you do things like consume fish oil, if you take a good dose of fish oil is anti-inflammatory, and it'll help to reduce inflammation in your body and promote anti-inflammatory compounds being present in your skin. Also, if you consume lots of fruits and vegetables, those promote the levels of antioxidants, especially if you consume fruits and vegetables that have a lot of carotenoids, beta-carotene, lutein, zeaxanthin. Those things will show up in your fat, and they act as optical blockers, and they also prevent the oxidation that causes skin cancer and skin changes. You can also take mixed carotenoids orally, and if you take a high enough dose, 25 to 50,000 IU, that can help to prevent sunburn. The other thing I like to recommend is astaxanthin. Astaxanthin is an antioxidant that's present in fish. It's present in krill and other small in plankton, and then higher up animals eat them, like shrimp. So if you see shrimp, especially those Stonington reds, those special kind of shrimp, they're red. And the red that's in the Stonington reds is astaxanthin. So you're going to get an extra antioxidant benefit from those Stonington reds. You're also going to get that antioxidant benefit if you eat salmon. So if you look at your salmon, you go to the store and you see salmon, you'll see that some of the salmon may be different colors from one another. The darker the salmon, the more astaxanthin it has in it. And if you get wild-caught salmon, whether it's coho or sockeye, it's likely going to be darker than the farmed salmon. The farmed salmon just don't get enough critters in their diet to get that astaxanthin level up. So you're going to get a higher astaxanthin level from your wild salmon. So the darker the salmon is, the more likely it is to have astaxanthin, as long as that is a wild-caught fish. I saw some beautiful salmon at the grocery store the other day, and The farmed salmon looked pale compared to it, so I bought the wild caught salmon. It was very good. You made it for me last night. You marinated it, which is very good.
I made you a nice salad.
And a nice salad. It was a very good salad. Salads are ridiculous this time of year because
they're great.
We just have so much wonderful fresh produce now from our farmers markets and from our gardens and things.
The cucumbers are alive now.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The good cucumbers.
They're not the store cucumbers anymore.
I know,
they taste like cucumbers.
The other thing that's very
like
humorous is we have a compost. And our compost pile is just, we don't do anything special to our compost. It's just a pile out back that we just dump our unused portions of our produce. And I think we have some really healthy weeds around the compost pile. And we also have, because you put, with the coffee grounds go in the compost pile.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the soil likes that, the coffee grounds for nutrition. I think we have some volunteer beets over there. Because I pulled up some greens that look like beet greens, and we're going to have to go. I yanked out the greens, and the roots wouldn't come up. So I have to go back there with a shovel, a trowel, and see if I can get some beets up.
I think we have some sort of a squash or cucumber growing back there, too.
I think you're right,
There's a very large-leafed plant that looks similar to either a squash or a cucumber.
That's really funny. Mm-hmm. And we might even have a... I'm not sure if we have tomato plants back there, too.
There's also some basil plants back there, too.
That's great.
Yeah.
And the volunteers.
Well, the basil was kind of sprinkled on top of the compost pile as a ha-ha experiment.
Uh-huh. And it took.
Yeah, it took.
That's awesome. So we're going to have our own basil.
Yeah,
growing out of the
sort of.
Pile.
Yeah, it's not the variety I was looking for. But
so
that's okay.
We have the lazy person's garden. We have a compost pile in the woods in the back of our house, where we threw compost, and now we're getting food out of it. That's
right.
Pretty funny.
But we also have Brian and Anita.
Yes.
And we also have...
Diane and Brian. Yes.
So we have our local farmers that we love to buy stuff from, too, because we like to support them because we want to keep them in business.
And we also have Sarah.
And Sarah.
Sarah from Not Only Juice.
Right.
She
makes... Who is like... She's a goddess.
She makes green juice that when I drink it, I feel like I'm healing while it's going down.
Right. We're not supposed to plug businesses, are we?
Well, you plug them lightly. You don't
lightly.
Say go here or anything. You just
a
say,
light plug.
You just mention that we saw Sarah at the farmer's
market.
Yeah,
Sarah's
nice.
At the farmer's market. You can go to the farmer's market.
Yeah,
there you go.
Right.
That's lightly mentioned.
Yeah. So anyway, in terms of Sean, and his heat sun rash, like I said, taking beta-carotene, taking fish oil, taking astaxanthin can all be helpful, and probably do extra SPF sunscreen and get a natural kind, and that will be quite helpful. Now, let me just touch on another kind of rash, which is milioriasis, otherwise known as prickly heat. And for those of you who get prickly heat, you know that it can be really itchy and miserable, and if you scratch it, it can get excoriated and can get infected and stuff. So let's try not to let it get that far. So if you're a person who has parts of your body where you have, you know, major intertriginous zones, the intertriginous zones are places in your body where you have folds. So, you know, if you are an endowed woman, you're going to get heat rash under your breasts. You can get heat rash in your groin, in your inguinal region, if you have folds in your tummy, if you're one of the most of the America that doesn't have a six pack, you can get it in the folds of your tummy. So there's different places where you can get heat rash, and it'll look like, it'll almost look like you have the measles. It'll be kind of itchy and lots of little dots, and it'll be kind of red, and you won't feel sick. You'll just have a rash. And so what the heck is that? What it is, it's your sweat glands. So your sweat glands, you know, you sweat out, will sweat. And the sweat has, depending on what kind of sweat it is, it has varying levels of protein in it. And, you know, if you're not exercising and you're sweating, you're going to have more protein in your sweat. When your body's generally trying to cool you down, your sweat's going to be just more watery and have more electrolytes in it. But there is going to be some protein in it. If you're nervous, you tend to kick out more protein in your sweat. But anyway, there's nothing really for the for microorganisms to eat unless you sweat out some of that protein. And so when you do, microorganisms living on your skin go yum, 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 and they start eating. And then your body goes, hey, you can't overgrow there. And it produces an inflammatory response, and it will produce it in the sweat glands. And then it'll spread, and you get all these little sweat glands that are inflamed and itchy, and they have a little infection in them. And it's actually not very difficult to treat. You can, what I like to tell people to do is get yourself some plain old witch hazel. And what you do is you get the witch hazel, and then it's good to throw some essential oils in it. A good essential oil to throw in the witch hazel is tea tree oil. Thyme oil, if you can get your hands on it, would be very good. That's T-H-Y-M-E, would be a very good one. Red cedar oil might be nice as well. And then for soothing, you could do lavender, and that'll make it smell nice too. And if you mix up a combination of that, the witch hazel with those essential oils in it, and then you just apply it to your skin, you'll get a nice tonic that'll probably kill that kill your prickly heat in short order. And then after you let yourself air dry, you can get powders. And when you get powder, I recommend getting a powder that's made of clay or cornstarch, probably better clay, because cornstarch is going to feed yeast that lives on your skin, whereas clay won't. So if you get a clay-based powder, again, you can get those at the health food store, or you can get straight-up clay. You can get clay-based powders that have essential oils in them from the health food store if you just want to buy a product and use it. There is a product you can get that's actually a foot powder, and it's clay-based, and then it has a lot of essential oils, including both tea tree and lavender. Doesn't matter that it's a foot powder. You can put it on the rest of your body. It's okay. And it'll tend to soak up the sweat. And then you'll be a little bit drier, and you're going to be a little bit less likely to get sweaty like that. And then, you know, spend time in cool environments. Then you might want to consider washing yourself. Use tea tree oil in the shower. So use tea tree oil soap in the shower. Wash yourself with a washcloth and scrub the areas where you tend to get the prickly heat. And that way you're going to clean away some of the bacteria that are going to tend to cause that milariasis. There are products that you can get at the drugstore that are considered to be toners that have a lot of essential oils in them. And anything that's a toner that has essential oils in it, that has maybe some camphor or tea tree oil, or anything like that, is going to do a nice job of not only killing the bacteria on that rash, it's also going to have a nice cooling effect, and it'll feel nice when it's going on. And then it's cooling like that, and then it evaporates, it cools the area, and then that just makes the rash feel better. But also that evaporating activity, that's going to help to dry the area as well, because those bacteria and mold and fungus, whatever's living on there, is going to thrive in heat. You can also get fungal rashes on your skin, and the treatment isn't that much different. Tea tree oil will get a fungal rash. And my feeling is that if you have a fungal rash and you're having a hard time killing it with tea tree oil, it's okay to go and get some over-the-counter antifungal cream. For the amount of antifungal cream, if it's effective, it's fine to use, but then I do recommend doing powder. The other thing is there should be powder with probiotic in it. And if you don't have something like that, you can get probiotic powders and mix that with a baby powder, just a little bit of probiotic, maybe a quarter teaspoon of probiotic powder to whatever amount of baby powder you have, or you know, a topical powder, your tea tree powder that I mentioned before. If you threw some probiotic in there, that would help to keep bad bacteria and fungus away, and because you have beneficial microflora that live on your skin, and throwing a little probiotic powder into a dusting powder would be a really good thing. It's going to keep stuff away. So that's really nice. So there you go. That's your heat rashes of the week. All right. So a couple of other things. I wanted to give a big shout out to Cousin Suzanne, my Cousin Suzanne Rothbaum. It's her birthday today, and she lives in Boca Raton, Florida. So I want to say happy birthday to her. She's my first cousin. So of all my first cousins on both sides of my family, she was the first grandchild born, and I was the second. So Suzanne was my first cousin.
Ah, so she was she's the oldest of the cousins.
Of all my first cousins, mm-hmm. Yes. She may have an older first cousin on her mother's side, I don't know. But of my first cousins, she's my oldest. She's the oldest of Minnie and Harry's grandchildren. And she's older than, Teddy and Fanny's grandchildren. I'm the oldest of the four of Teddy and Fanny's grandchildren. So it was myself and then Nancy and then David and then Eric. And then on the other side, there's eight of us. And Suzanne is the oldest. So anyway, Suzanne was my first memory of having, she was one of my first friends, really. And because I, you know, met her when I was a baby. And so we've known each other forever. And when we were little kids, we fell in love with David Cassidy together.
Oh boy.
And my father, Suzanne would come and spend a week at my house in the summer. Some years it was Suzanne, some years it was Laura, and some years it was cousin Randy. And Randy's actually my third cousin. But Suzanne or Laura would come. But one particular year, I want to say it was 1971 or 72. In that summer, Suzanne came and stayed for a week. And my father used to like to take me with him to the hardware store. And I never understood why. Why do you want me to go to the hardware store? I didn't understand that it was because my dad liked me and he wanted me for company.
The hardware store is fun.
Yeah,
it's like going to the toy store when you're, you know, when you're like your dad or like me.
I know.
I love going to the hardware store.
So there was this place in Windsor, New Jersey, called Mac Lumber. It's not there anymore. Remember I took you to the chocolate place in Windsor there?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's about where Mac Lumber was. And my dad used to take me there to go get whatever he needed from the lumber store, from the hardware store. And anyway, so my dad told Suzanne and me that he was taking us to Mac Lumber. We said, okay. We got in the back of the car and we were on our way to Mac Lumber. And then my father passed us a newspaper clipping. Remember newspapers? Well, he passed us a newspaper clipping.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
Can't believe you said that.
I know, right? Mm-hmm. And so we look at the newspaper clipping and it said that David Cassidy was playing at the Garden State Arts Center. That day, Garden State Arts Center is now known as the PNC Center in Holmdel, New Jersey. But back then it was, people still called the Garden State Arts Center if you're from Jersey. Anyway, so it said Garden State Arts Center, David Cassidy today. And what did Suzanne and I do?
What?
It was loud. We screamed.
Oh,
we were so excited.
Yeah, because it was David Cassidy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we went to David Cassidy. My dad took us to see David Cassidy. We were so excited. We screamed the whole time. It was so much fun. And then later on, cousin Suzanne and I, we knew all the Partridge Family albums and all the Partridge Family songs. And we were in love with David Cassidy. And then a couple years later, we graduated to Elton John and we were in love with Elton John and we knew all the Elton John songs and got all the albums. And Suzanne really got me into Elton John. And to this day, I still love both David Cassidy and Elton John. And Suzanne had the opportunity to see David Cassidy in Boca Raton. She almost got to meet him, but it didn't work out. But that was pretty funny. So when she got a hold of me when she was about, and this was like a couple of years ago. So anyway, so I've gotten to see Suzanne a few times in the last few years. She lives down in Florida and I live up here. Unfortunately, it's because of my dad's passing, I got to see her a little bit more. But I hope to see her on happier occasions. So big happy birthday to my dear cousin, Suzanne Rothbaum Hayward. And she has a great day and like that. And I'm going to tag her on Facebook and then she'll know she's on my podcast. All right. So we had rashes. We had cousin Suzanne and now we have, I wanted to talk a little bit about overtraining, in fitness because it's that time of year. It's late July.
We do have a caller that called in about something too.
All right. Why don't we,
if you want to do that,
let's do that first.
Okay, so I had a call from a few callers here. One caller that called in and said, thank you for your advice. You had recommended stinging nettle extract as a natural antihistamine and had great results with it. So that's something that you got a big thank you for.
Nettles are great, and if you do nettles, it's really the best way to do them, I think, is either to drink tea or to use a tincture because you're going to get the most bang for your buck. You may get good results with a good quality freeze-dried nettle cap, but if you're willing to drink the tea or you're willing to take the tincture, I've had great experiences with nettles where I drink the tea and I immediately feel better and likewise take the tincture. It's good stuff.
Well, it was Mikey from Putnam, and he thanks you over and over again for that one because it really worked well for him.
Great. It's very nutritious, too. It's nature's multivitamin and mineral.
And he also said something about using dandelion greens because they're high in vitamin A.
They are. Well, they're not vitamin A, but beta carotene. There's beta-carotene. No vitamin A in plants.
There is no. Yeah, okay.
It's beta carotene. It's pro-vitamin A.
Right.
It's precursor to vitamin A. Vitamin A.
So he just wanted to call in and let us know that he was really appreciative of your information. So that's always nice to hear. Thank you very much for listening. I also got a call from Rod from Lebanon, who wanted you to touch on magnesium, possibly. He has tightness and soreness. He feels sometimes weak. He's working around the yard. And he said, you know, it's like I'm working around the yard. I get down and I try to get back up again. And I'm sore and I'm tight. And he didn't know if magnesium might be an answer for him. He's almost 50. And we chuckled about that. I told him to wait
almost
until
50?
Wait until he's 62. But anyway, you know, as he's getting older, he's starting to, you know, wonder if there's things that he should be paying attention to as far as supplements go. But magnesium was one of the things on his list.
Yeah.
And I told him that I took it a lot for cramps, but he didn't seem to have any major symptoms other than he's tight and he's sore and he's feeling weak and he feels like he needs a boost. So can you touch on that?
Well, magnesium is interesting because our needs for magnesium are quite high, and a lot of people are magnesium insufficient. The reason people are magnesium insufficient is because they don't eat the veggies, because the number one way you get magnesium is from green stuff.
Right, green stuff. The darker, the better.
Yeah, because magnesium, the main source for magnesium in our diets is chlorophyll, and chlorophyll is the green pigment in all your green vegetables, especially leafy ones.
Right.
So you're going to get your magnesium if you eat greens. So what I often find with people is people are tight and sore and they have muscle pain or they have anxiety or they have heart palpitations. Magnesium is important for so many different things in your body. And what it does is it calms stuff down. So it calms down the functioning of your nerves. It's a membrane stabilizer. So it helps to stabilize your cell membranes so they're not so reactive. And it does that with nerves and it does that with muscles. So it's a moderator. It's a peacemaker. It's a peacemaker in your body, and it's a peacemaker in the world. So people who consume more magnesium are more peaceful than people who do not. So if you eat a highly inflammatory diet where you don't eat a lot of whole foods and you eat too much starch and sugar and eat too much meat and you don't eat a lot of vegetables, you're going to be a more aggressive, warlike person.
So carnivores are more warlike.
Well, they're exclusively carnivores, if you can eat meat and lots of vegetables, and then you're not going to be warlike.
Okay.
Or not going to be so warlike. That's generalization, of course. But if you eat anything if you don't eat your magnesium, you're going to be magnesium insufficient, and then you're going to have the issues of low magnesium. And magnesium helps to stabilize blood sugar. Magnesium is a cofactor for a lot of enzymes in your liver. It's a very important mineral. And so you have to check your magnesium status. Are you magnesium sufficient? You can get a blood test, an RBC. I like to do magnesium through red blood cell you can do a couple of things. Serum magnesium is going to tell you how much magnesium is running around in your body in general. Red blood cell magnesium is going to tell you about utilization, that it's being actually taken up into the cells. So if you have good red blood cell magnesium, you have good usage. However, if you have symptoms of low magnesium, even if your RBC magnesium is okay, you could still take it. How you know how much magnesium to take, that depends on the person. The more produce you eat, the less you'll need to take. And the way you test this out is if you get a magnesium supplement. First of all, I'm not crazy about magnesium oxide. It's dirt. And I don't mean that in a nasty way. I mean that literally magnesium oxide is in dirt. And you can buy magnesium oxide. It's very inexpensive. And it does work for some people, but it's not super absorbable. You're going to get more bang from your buck from magnesium citrate malate, magnesium glycinate, magnesium mixed chelate, magnesium lactate, all these other nice magnesium salts. Because your body looks at the salts and says, hey, I could use that for something else. And then the magnesium will fall into your cells. It's very nice. Yeah. So what happens is if you decide to take magnesium pills, what you'll find is that I can't tell you how much to take because it depends on you. What I recommend people do is whatever magnesium product you get, start by taking one pill in a day and increase by one pill a day until you get some loose stool. then once you have the loose stool, you know you took too much. Magnesium, if you take too much magnesium, it's not harmless. It's not really toxic. There's probably a point at which it's toxic. But you're probably not going to go there unless you don't mind having loose stools. So if your stools become too loose, at that point, you back off to the last dose you took where you didn't have the loose stools and you have a normal daily bowel movement. And that's your dose. And that will vary with the amount of magnesium you're getting in your diet. So if you're eating lots of salad every day, your magnesium pill dose is going to be different than if you don't. And magnesium can profoundly change the way that you feel. It can make you calmer. It can make you less jittery. It can soften your muscles. It can help your blood sugar regulation. It can make you feel less anxious. It's really tremendous how important magnesium is in the diet. Everybody thinks that, oh my goodness, you have to get calcium, lots and lots of calcium. I'm going to drink that milk. I'm going to take calcium pills. Calcium is not as important as, I mean, you have to have calcium in your body. You would die without enough calcium, but, people underrepresent their magnesium, and I don't like it when people take more calcium than magnesium, because calcium unchecked can cause calcifications in your body in places where you don't want it, where you get you can get kidney stones and you can get calcifications on your bones. It's not really good to do. And if you have magnesium, it will moderate that and it will make you less likely to get that. If you take enough magnesium, you're going to be less likely to get kidney stones, especially if you pair that with drinking a lot of water. So that's important to do. So yeah, magnesium is really important. And then just in general about being achy and sore as we get older. So things to help prevent the achy sore, especially from activity. The first thing to do, that there's two really simple things to do. One is drink plenty of water, because when you drink water, you carry away, well, every time you use your muscles or you use your tendons and ligaments, you have a usage fee. And so what you're doing is you're causing usage. You're using resources to make those muscle cells fire, and they have to be replenished, and you're causing some degree of inflammation. And the small amount of inflammation is okay. That is how you build more muscle cells. When you inflame your muscles by doing a bicep curl, your body's going to go, oh, she's using that bicep. I'm going to shore up that bicep so that she can use it again. And so you wind up making more muscle cells. And part of the process of making more muscle cells is, in fact, inflammation. You want to be less sore, and you want the substrates that you need to rebuild those muscles to be carried more efficiently. They need to be in something, and the best vehicle is water. So drinking plenty of water can literally make you less sore. So that's a very simple thing that people don't realize. Oh, should I take this pill? Should I take that pill? What should I do? Drinking lots of water can reduce delayed onset muscle soreness, and it can reduce soreness in general, just because it carries things away. It makes your liver and your kidneys and your lymphatics, they're all emunctories. When your sweat glands are emunctories too. Emunctories are organs in your body that carry stuff away. They let you get rid of stuff. Your digestive system would be an emunctory as well. Any which way that you excrete stuff, those are your emunctories. And so the emunctories will all work better if you're well hydrated. So that's another thing that you can do. The other thing that's important to do to be less sore is, wait for it, rest.
Rest. Oh, yeah, that. Right. Rest.
People work themselves to the bone without taking
God,
a break.
Oh, my God, did they ever.
And so one of the things that I have learned over the years, and this segues into, we're going to touch on overtraining today. I don't know how much we're going to get to that today, but the idea of rest. Rest is very important. Rest is important. It's important to take days where you completely rest. It's also important to rest through the course of your day. So if you're working in your yard, it's important to take breaks. And if you're getting real sore doing a particular task, you may want to take breaks every 15 minutes. And it doesn't have to be a long break, just a break that's long enough so that you stand up, that you stretch, or sit down and stretch, and drink some water, and do some things to care for your body, and then you'll be less likely to get sore. I mean, when I'm doing intervals on my bicycle, I get a lot of rest, and I have a good coach now, my coach Aaron. He's wonderful. He gives me lots of rest between intervals, longer rest than I used to do. I mean, I was doing 3-minute hill repeats yesterday with 6 minutes rest in between. That's a lot of rest, isn't it?
Yeah.
I used to do hill repeats where I would go up the hill, do the repeat, go down the hill, and that was my rest, and then I go back up the hill. And he doesn't have me doing that anymore. He has me doing lots of rest. And you know what happens when you get lots of rest? You feel like getting up and doing stuff again. And, you know, if you have 6 minutes rest between your hill repeats, you're not going to mind doing the next hill repeat.
Right.
It's really cool. So I'm learning a lot about rest. I know, rest, right? So if you're doing physical labor, it's important to take rest. And as I'm suggesting 15 minutes, but you can take it more often than that. It doesn't have to be long, but just enough so that you catch your breath, you stretch your muscles, you're not, you know, in one cramped position doing a certain task, and you let your muscles take a break and relax. So that's really important to do. You're going to be less sore if you rest. The other thing that's going to help you to be less sore is to stretch. who would have thought, right? So when you're doing your rest, doing some stretching is a good idea. And whatever muscles you're using, those are the ones to stretch. And again, this is a big shout out to Aaron, who gave me, it sounds so silly, and I don't know if I talked about this last week, but he changed my life. He really did.
Yeah.
And it's all about the psoas. You know what they say.
All about the psoas?
Yes, it's all about the psoas.
Okay, explain, please.
Yes. You know what they say. As is above, so as below. That's a PT joke. It's a Wiccan / PT / chiropractor. Not everybody gets that joke, so I have to explain it because not everybody's going to get it. As is above, first of all, as above, so below. If you celebrate in the Wiccan tradition, that's a saying that speaks to the unity of the heavens and the earth, and that we are all one. That it's a lovely saying, as above, so below. So that's where it comes from. As is above, so as below is a play on that, and in order for that to even be funny, you have to know what that even means. So as is an abbreviation for the for the anterior superior iliac spine. So if you,
You are such a nerd.
Thank you. Anyway, I have to thank a classmate of mine who was a chiropractor before she was a naturopath, Lisanji Edson. She's the one who said as is above, so as below to me first. Anyway, so thank you, Lisanji, for saying that. Anyway, if you want to find your as is, so go to your hips, right? So find your hip bones in your hips. And you know those pointy things that stick out and they're sort of in the front? There's a point that sticks out on either side.
Right.
That's your anterior superior iliac
spine. Don't fall on that.
Spine.
It really hurts.
Yes. You know, your hip, you have your iliac crest, which is the ilium, the ILIUM, that whole part that if you go from that ASIS and then you'll find there's a ridge that goes all the way to your back and then down. Those are your hip bones, and that part of your hip bone is called the ilium.
And the hip bone's connected to the?
Oh, I don't know, the femur?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hip bone's the leg bone, the femur, right. Right, yeah, okay. So anyway, so the ASIS is that point on the ilium, that hip bone that sticks out that you can feel, those two little points.
Mm-hmm.
And the psoas muscle is right below it, and it does have an attachment to the ASIS. So the psoas is spelled P-S-O-A-S, and it is a wicked important muscle. So the psoas muscle is attached. The first attachment is to the front side or anterior side of L4, your fourth lumbar vertebrae, and it has two sides to it, and it goes down and it crosses over your L5 and sacrum, and then it comes forward and it attaches to your ASIS, and it goes through a lot of organs. Like it's nearby to a lot of important organs. All of your pelvic organs are right near your psoas, and its job is to pull your leg up. You know, it pulls your leg.
Right.
It's funning you all day. It's pulling your leg.
Your leg.
But that's what it
Very
does. It's
funny.
A hip. It's otherwise known as a hip flexor. It flexes your hip. That's what it does. So the thing is, if you ride a bicycle, you are going to be in a position where your hip flexors are going to be crunched for a lot of the time. And also, if you people who are sitting at your computers, those of you who sit all day, if you sit at a computer screen, if you sit in a car, you're going to be crunching those hip flexors all the time. So the psoas is very vulnerable in 21st century North America Do you know why I say 21st century North America and not 21st century America?
No.
It's very simple. What's my citizenship?
You're Canadian.
Yes.
As well as being here.
Right. So, and I practiced in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't do when I was in Canada to say 21st century America. Anyway, I was in Canada in the 20th century, but all right. But that's why I say 21st century North America, because I'm including Canada in that.
Okay, then.
So if you're in 21st century North America, your lifestyle dictates often that you sit a lot. And so if you're sitting a lot, you're gonna have tight hip flexors. So and tight hip flexors, I had no idea. And something came through in one of my health-related emails that talked about how important the hip flexors are and how hip flexor tightness can cause all kinds of health problems. It can make you feel depressed. It can affect your reproductive function. It can affect your sex drive. It can affect your digestion. Anything that's in that area can be affected. And you actually will feel better if you do nice stuff to your psoas. So there's a really simple stretch. This is why I say thank you so much, Aaron, which is he just showed me this great hip flexor stretch, and it was really simple.
I did it this morning after spin class.
We were at the gym. Mm. Yeah, so you did it on the bench?
Yes, on
right,
the bench.
Exactly.
Yes.
All he we're at the gym. He said, come here, Fran. You have tight hip flexors. Put your knee on this bench. So I put my knee on the bench. So he had me walk the opposite leg forward and in front of the knee, and he had me put my rear knee that was sitting on the bench at least a 45-degree angle and sit into it. And that was the stretch. And it's a great psoas stretch. Why would that be any better than, you know, that crescent warrior that you always make us do? You know, that runner's lunge that you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's better because you're not working on the crescent warrior is very good. That don't get me wrong. It is very good. The problem with the crescent warrior, and you know how you make us lift our arms in the air?
Yeah.
The issue with trying to get your hip flexor with that is in order to do that entire pose, you're not only focused on the hip flexor. You have to use your stabilizing muscles for balance. And so you can't focus on just the hip flexor. When you put your knee on that bench and put your leg forward and you don't worry about all those stability muscles, you can focus completely on the hip flexor. And it really releases it because you're not also trying to stabilize all the time. I'm not saying you shouldn't do the crescent warrior because it is good. So when you do that stretch, it's difficult to talk about on the air. I think what we have to do is we're going to have to take a picture of me doing the stretch, and we'll attach it when we have the podcast. If you go to Fran Storch, ND Naturopathic Physician, Radio Naturopath on Facebook, there'll be a picture attached to the post, and you can see the stretch.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. Anyway, what you do is you put your you put that front leg forward, and the rear leg has the knee on the bench, and then you lean into it so that you have a rough, at least a 45-degree angle for your hip flexor. And it's just tremendous how much good that stretch can do.
Yeah.
And it just I've felt more limber in every area of your body. So if you have a pain in your back anywhere, doesn't matter if it's just your hip flexors, you might feel better in your entire spine just from doing that stretch.
Right, sure.
Because the hip flexors, if it's pulling on your L4, it pulls your whole body together and it'll make you round shoulder and your entire spine.
Right, it pulls you over if it's too tight. Yeah.
And the other thing I find that I can't do as well when my hip flexors are tight is twist.
Right, and you know how people get tight hip flexors?
Yeah, they ride the bike, they
sit.
I said that already.
Oh, okay. And sitting. Sit in your car, you sit at your office,
exactly.
You sit at home, you sit, and
yes. And
then you get tight.
So there are some other stretches that can help. That one I really like just because when you do that stretch, you're not focusing on those stabilizers, you're just focusing on that psoas. Also, if you get body work done on the hip flexor, if you get massage, chiropractic can help, but getting some, you know, focused massage or trigger point work. Also, if you do trigger point work yourself with a foam roller or with lacrosse balls, tennis balls, or, AccuBalls, that can all help as well, just doing some focused work on that hip flexor.
That might be a little shout out to Rod in Lebanon, who's feeling stiff and tight.
Yeah, you know, well, he might, that's why I'm talking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's a good thing.
Yeah. So Rod and Levin, and we hope that you will consider trying the hip flexor stretch.
Yes,
absolutely. Stretching in general is something that can help Rod and Levin. And people don't necessarily spend time stretching. And how often do you go for a workout, and you know, a walk or a bike ride or an anything, and you don't finish with a stretch?
Oh, too often.
You get more benefit from your workout if you stretch at the end. And like, you know, for us, we're in the bike club. So when we get back to the parking lot and are schmoozing, while we're schmoozing, we could be stretching. And you could even invite whoever you're schmoozing with. Hey, would you like to stretch with me? I'm going to do some stretches now. So
right.
It's a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, what about overtraining?
Yeah, well, now we...
Do you have time to talk about that, or do you want to wait for another show on that one?
We probably have to table it.
Okay.
For the week, I do want to say that this time of year, this is when it starts to happen, because people are working out,
mm-hmm.
people are starting to feel very fit, and then all of a sudden they hit a wall and they get really tired. So I think we're going to table the whole discussion of overtraining to next week.
To be continued. But if you were feeling like you were incredibly fit and feeling really good, and then all of a sudden one day woke up and went, huh, then you now need to listen to our next show.
Yeah. That's true.
Right?
Because overtraining is no fun.
So that's a plug for your next show.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're welcome.
That's a good thing.
You're welcome.
Right. So anyway, some other stuff. I have been trying to limit my dairy because I have a tiny allergy to dairy. And I do eat yogurt, and I do eat some really good quality yogurt. But I've been trying, I do enjoy a small amount of frozen dessert. And so I wanted to just talk about dairy-free alternatives to frozen desserts. There are a lot of them. My goodness. I mean, dairy-free has gotten so good. It used to be all you could get was Rice Dream. And Rice Dream was pretty good.
It was okay.
Yeah. Okay. But now there's so many alternatives, and they're so good.
That one we had the other day at Divine Treasures.
So you can get ice cream. Or frozen dessert beverage, I guess. I don't know that you can call it ice cream because it's not technically cream. But you can get a frozen dessert.
Frozen nut cream.
Sure, nut cream.
Kind of, sort of.
That's fine.
I don't know.
And it's this one is made from cashews. So they have cashew frozen dessert, and it's soft serve at Divine Treasures. We found it very good.
Mm-hmm.
You can also get at the supermarket and at the health food store, you can get frozen dessert made from cashews. It's very good. I've had flavors that I don't even know that I'm not eating dairy. It's just so good because it's fatty and rich and creamy
the
and
texture
very delicious.
Is very, very good.
Very good.
Yeah.
The coconut is also very good. So it's the frozen dessert that's made from coconut. Mm-hmm. Also delicious. The other thing I like to have is sorbet or sorbetto. And sorbets and sorbettos have gotten better and better. And, you know, there's certain brands. If you go to your favorite gelato stand, gelato stands will also have sorbetto. So
right. It's
not sorbet, because sorbet is French. Sorbetto is Italian. It's the same thing, though. So
don't tell the French or the Italians that.
Oh. Okay, so sorbetto.
You could start a war.
Sorbetto is incredible because if it's made the right way, it's very rich and creamy, and there's no dairy in it, and it can be made in fruit flavors. And I've had sorbettos that are not fruit flavors. I've had a peanut butter fudge sorbetto, no dairy,
really
super delicious. And the best is dark chocolate sorbetto. And when we were at the Farm to Fork in Finger Lakes,
mm-hmm.
there was a lovely woman there named Maria, who had spent time in Italy learning to make gelato.
Oh.
And she was serving her gelato and sorbetto at a rest stop. So I had some of both. And one was called, she had some lovely name for it, like flowery cream or I don't know. And it was basically a very high quality vanilla. And then she also had a strawberry sorbetto. And I had some of each. And they were outrageous. And the sorbetto, the strawberry sorbetto was just incredible. Because I love strawberries. And this was rich and creamy and really delicious. And no dairy in it.
How about that?
And I said to her, that I talked about a gelato place down in Westerly that makes dark chocolate sorbetto, and it was heavenly. And she said, oh, absolutely, that she thought that the best way to do chocolate, better than gelato, was to do it as a sorbetto, that that's the right way to do it. Because
really? Why? Because
you get the full experience. What do you like better? You like dark chocolate? You like milk chocolate?
Oh, dark chocolate.
Well, there you
go. Milk chocolates, why bother?
There you go.
Right.
Right. So, and yet you eat ice cream that's chocolate ice cream.
Right.
But you prefer your ice cream to be pretty dark and rich, right?
I do.
So if you get a really good dark chocolate sorbetto, you don't have the dairy interfering with all the intense notes of the chocolate.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you're going to get more chocolate per unit volume.
Well, intense chocolate is what it's all about.
Right. So we have some store-bought at home, which I will let you try, and you can tell me what you think of it. But the best I've had has been from gelato shops. And so we'll have to hit somewhere, and that place in Westerly is good. We can try that and see what you think. So,
okay.
So yeah, so you if you are looking for frozen dessert, you don't have to have dairy. You can have things that are quite delicious that are non-dairy, if you would like that. I have blood orange sorbetto at home. It's really delicious, and you know sorbetto can come in many flavors, and you know you can find them at the supermarket, and you can different brands make them, and you can also find them at gelato shops, so that those of you who are dairy-free, more and more you can get dairy-free items. The other thing is Ben & Jerry's now has some non-dairy varieties.
How about that?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that have problems with dairy.
Sure.
So
yeah.
it's a good thing.
Yeah, so it's a nice health. Now, not that you should be eating tons of ice cream all the time because there's a sugar issue, but if you're having a small amount in the course of your very healthy day, it can be a nice addition to give you the pleasure of life.
Yes.
Yes.
I like it.
Yes.
I like it. Sounds good.
Right.
What other frozen things do you do in the summer?
Right. So the other thing is, now Aaron was talking to me about banana ice cream, that you can make ice cream out of bananas, where you take frozen bananas
that.
And you can have it just be banana, or you can throw in peanut butter, or you can throw in cocoa powder,
right,
and make the ice cream out of bananas.
And you whip it up in like a food processor,
yes,
and then it turns it into this cream,
yes,
and then you can freeze it,
yes,
and then you have, I've done that.
Yes. Did you like it?
It's okay. It's
you
okay.
Like the cashew stuff better?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Well, and I wonder if the banana stuff was more blended and not as frozen, if it would be more, because you
it want. It was frozen blended, and so it has a different texture to it,
yeah,
and you know it's kind of like hard as a rock when you first try to dig into it, and then eventually it gets soft enough so that you can.
There's another thing I wanted to mention. If you like having fruit pops, there's something you can do. You can cut melon chunks and freeze them, and then you can eat them as a frozen treat in a bowl.
Really?
Or you can use them, wait for it, as ice cubes.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. So
that's
a neat
idea.
You can take some of your melon and freeze it and then throw it in water, and now you have melon water.
Oh, and the cantaloupe right now is like...
We had that cantaloupe. It was crazy.
Oh, my God. It was crazy good.
I know. And yeah. I have a honeydew at home that we're going to cut up today. And
you know, they're starting to come in, and they're really delicious right now.
And the local watermelons. Yes.
Yeah.
Watermelon, by the way, you don't think of watermelon as being super healthy for you, but it is. It's got wicked amounts of beta carotene.
How about that?
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
So it's a great antioxidant antioxidant power. So, you know, these are great ways to get your fiber. If you have problems with constipation, check your produce consumption. I have people come in, I'm so constipated, and it turns out they're overstarching and they're really not eating enough produce. If you eat enough produce, usually that will improve your constipation. Not in all cases, but a lot of the time, that's what's going on. You're not eating enough produce, and people forget to eat produce. They just overstarch, and they forget to. It doesn't have to be a big deal. You can go get some blueberries. There's places you can pick blueberries and raspberries and other foods now, other fruits now, and you just still buy them and eat them. You don't have to make them into something. I said that to somebody once. I said, "Why don't you eat more berries?" And they said, "Well, what am I going to do with the berries?" And I was like, "Eat them.
Just eat them."
And people don't think about doing that. That they think berries, it has to be made into something. Well, no, it doesn't. You can just eat them.
You can just eat them. You can, you know, you can toss them in a little yogurt. You can toss them into your cereal in the morning if you're eating that.
So you know how people like to smear nut butters on apples or pears, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I do a silly thing. In the berry season, what I will do is I'll throw berries in a bowl, and I'll put some nut butter on top of it and just eat it with a spoon.
Sure, why not?
And I do because I don't want the bread. I just want the fruit and the nut butter, and it's really good.
It's really good.
Yeah.
So. You can do all that. It's great.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we talked about a lot of interesting mishmash of this and that.
Yes.
It was very good. So thank you so much for listening to Radio Naturopath here on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, and you're going to hear more Radio Naturopath next week here on WHUS 91.7 FM.